This is happy. This is a happy occasion. Now I knew right away how powerful that you have become, because Greg invited me here, and he actually sent me a letter to be here, and said one paragraph: if your schedule permits, I would appreciate if you would join us at our convention to say a few words. A few words? I mean, a few words? I just flew 5 hours to say a few words? Here, that's your letter. Now, sisters and brothers, this might be a battleground state or not a battleground state. I guess it depends on how you define it. But I do know this: if Kerry doesn't carry Washington, he won't go to Washington. So it's up to you, sisters and brothers. Believe me, it is up to you. And I can feel the power in this room. Boy, oh boy, look how far you have come. This is magnificent. More power than ever before, sisters and brothers. And you got to thank everybody in this room. For 60 years, 60 years, that's about how old you are, Greg. 60 years, been fighting this battle for collective bargaining, negotiating a contract on economics, major fringe benefits. And now, here you are. You have to thank yourselves, but you have to thank maybe even a couple generations that came before you that manned the battlements, made the arguments, debates, stood out in the rain. It's not unusual. not unusual at all. But I mean, thank Jorgensen's back there, Howard Jorgensen, George Mastin, people like that, many of the people in the room. Got to thank everybody, particularly the rank and file activists. And oh, I remember, whether it was picketing at the state capitol, whether it was rallies at the state capitol, whether it was marches, downtown Seattle only about, what, a month ago that we had it? I mean, you were active. They knew you were alive. They knew you had a voice. They knew they had to do this. They had to give you collective bargaining. They had to negotiate a contract because you were united in solidarity. And I thank you on behalf of the whole union for what you have done here in Washington. We thank that fella Chop, Speaker Chop. I remember when he wasn't the Speaker. Speaker Chop, Senate Minority Leader Lisa Brown, for helping to make it happen. And I guess you have to thank Governor Locke. No, I think. I didn't say you had to. I think. I mean, he did sign it, didn't he? Yeah, he signed it. Reluctantly, maybe, but he signed it. In 2.5 years, you've organized 7,000 workers, new, bargained for 40,000. On July 1st, 2005, you will have almost doubled your membership due to the historic law that you passed. This is the most important victory in our union for many years. And we can now take the method, the model, of this victory, the activism of this victory, to other states and show them that it could be done in Washington State, and why can't you do it in Mississippi? Why can't you do it in Alabama? Why can't you do it in these other states? You have shown the way, sisters and brothers, the biggest victory in our union in 20 years. Thank you very much. But, as they say in AFSCME, it's never over. No, it's never over. Now, they got the contract, but you got to get funded, right? Got to get funded. That means you got to elect the Attorney General and make her governor, Christine Grigore. Yes, you do. And I'm here. I've done this a lot out here, I think. But I'm going to do it even more. In order to get her elected, in order for 28 to be able to win the Senate and keep the House, I'm here to present to you on behalf an appreciation of the whole union, $200,000 to help in that effort. I love it. That's the best part of the job. Best part of the job. We're going to elect the governor. We're going to keep the House. We're going to win the Senate because we need it all and we deserve it all. We need it all. Bottom line, and you heard from the central bodies and the state Fed, AFSCME is alive and well in Washington State, and it makes the labor movement alive and well in Washington State. You're the pioneers, you're the fiber, the strength of the labor movement here. 2 weeks ago, I got to settle down here. 2 weeks ago, I was in Ohio. And 350 local leaders there to talk about Kerry, talk about Edwards. And before I went in the room, one of our activists, Rankin Filer, came up to me. And he said, President McAtee, I have a message. He said, well, I can't deliver it. He said, you can probably deliver this message. He said, and would you look at it and deliver it? Not just here in Ohio, but every place that you go. He said, I think only people like you can deliver this kind of message. So I looked at it. I thought it was a fine message. And here's what it is. And I told him afterwards, after I did it in Ohio, I was going to do it every place, all across the country. And I've been every place. And here's his message to you. Let's get the crap out of the White House and install some Johns. That was wonderful. I've used that line all across the country. I should have been in the debate last night. I'd have used it. About 2 weeks ago, I was in Madison, Wisconsin. I've been there about four or five times. We're still five down. Maybe I should stay out of there, but we're going to win it. And I was in Madison, as probably some, maybe not all, know, is the home of our union. It's where it started, in Madison, Wisconsin. And I shared with them some thoughts, and I'd like to share them with you as well. I remember when our headquarters of AFSCME was in Madison, Wisconsin. My father was an international vice president. And we lived in Philadelphia, and he used to take a train to Madison. And an international executive board then would last probably about a week and a half. I mean, it took the train out and had the meeting and took the train back. He was very proud to do that, my father, because he started out as a, what they used to call them then, a trash truck driver in the city of Philadelphia. My father, and I've never done this before, talk to you about this, but my father and my mother never got out of grade school. Never. No high school, no college, obviously. Had to go to work. And my father became a trash truck driver for the city. And my mother was stay-at-home mom and raised myself and my sister and lost a couple kids along the way. But in our house, it was a lot of talk about the union. And he went from being a trash truck driver to working for the union. He eventually became the head of a local called 420. It's still in Philly. It's all the sanitation workers. And then he became the head of the council. And so our life, we were lower middle class. It wasn't too bad. But in my family, I was the first one to graduate from grade school, from high school, and they were able to send me to college. And the tuition then wasn't real high. And so, and they didn't trust banks because they had lost nine, well, I don't trust them now, but they they had lost $900 in the Depression. So they never put another dime in a bank. And they hid the money all over the house. Wasn't a big house either. And they hid it in these little boxes. When it came time for the tuition for college, my mother would come down, open a box, and show it and take out all these $1 bills. And then she'd spread them out because they were all crinkled up. And she'd give them to me. It was $300 a semester. So I went to school. My sister went to college as well. All because of the union. Because of the union. And it was then, but I'm not sure now, where each, it seemed to be, each generation would do a little better, a lot better than the last generation. So I went to college and then worked for the union. And I've been working for the union now for almost 45 years. So AFSCME. That's all right. We will take emails for raises in case you're interested. But no, a long time. And I've had a good life. I've had a good life. Four daughters we've raised. All of them went to college. One a master's degree. Three of them have careers. And one's a stay-at-home mom. Lives in Jacksonville, Florida. I'll tell you a quick story about one of my granddaughters. She lives in Florida, in Jacksonville. She was at the convention with one of my daughters and son-in-law. And so they had a picture of them with John Kerry. When they came back, she said, you know, she's only 8 years old. She said, Mom, I think I'd like to take that into that show and tell, right? And then she was back to school for about a week. And then she came back and she told my daughter, Mom, I'm not going to do that, she said, because it seems like all the kids in the school don't like Kerry. They like Bush. Because there's a couple kids in the school are saying that their fathers or their grandfathers were in Vietnam. And when Kerry came back from Vietnam, he said all these bad things about everybody in Vietnam, everybody left in Vietnam. He said all these bad things about them. Threw away these medals. And then when they said when their fathers or grandfathers came back, that everybody spit on them because of John Kerry. That's the kind of campaign this is. That's the kind of America this is. You know, in this election, no matter how it goes, really, I'll probably be okay. No matter how it goes, my daughters will probably be okay. Might get tougher. Not as good as it was 3 or 4 years ago. But okay. But I worry now. What I worry about is this country. And I worry about the fact that I have 8 grandchildren. 8 of them. Okay? 8 grandchildren. I got one that's 18. And he always is looking over his shoulder about Iraq. I got one that's 16, ready to go to college, but he can't find a job to help him to go to college. So it seems that it's more difficult, it's harder. The expectation of the next generation being better and improved seems to have sort of crept or drifted away. But I'm here asking you, and I would tell Bush and Cheney and all the rest, that as far as the McEntees are concerned, together, my father and I, 74 years in this union, and Bush or Cheney or anybody else isn't going to hurt this union. And by God, the McEntees and all of you are going to see to the fact that Bush and Cheney are out of the White House and Kerry and Edwards are in there. Thank you. You know, I've only done that 3 times, that story. But I'm glad when I do it. We had a focus group, you might be aware of this, out here in Washington just a short time ago. Larry Scanlon, who works for the union, and others were out here, did a focus group. We did it in Washington State, I think we did it in Ohio. Did it in Minnesota. I was there last week in Minnesota. And what we found out that our union, the members, are probably edging right up around 70% in support of Kerry. 70% in support of Kerry. What we got to do is even get 4 or 5% more for Kerry. That's how close this is. That's how tight this is. But we found out that in our union, your union, we still have a relatively high number of undecideds. And what they said was they don't like Bush. Don't like Bush. What they said was, we don't know this Kerry. We don't know him. We don't know really what he stands for. Who is this guy, John Kerry? Well, I'll tell you who he is, and I hope you tell them. 20 years in the United States Senate. Before that, a lieutenant governor, Massachusetts. We got a union of 45,000, Massachusetts. John Kerry was in every battle. He would walk picket lines. You know what that's like. He was with and for our union every step of the way as a lieutenant governor. 20 years in the United States Senate, sisters and brothers. You heard Bush try to keep saying he's a liberal, he's a liberal, he's a liberal last night. Well, I don't think there's anything wrong with being a liberal. I don't think anything wrong with being a liberal or a progressive. I don't. His record, 20 years, 94% for working families for the AFL-CIO. 94. For you, for AFSCME members, 100%. 20 years, 100% for you, sisters and brothers. He was there. He was there for you. Every step of the way, collective bargaining, minimum wage, pose the privatization, organizing unions. That's what you're doing. Organizing unions. Kerry and Edwards are the only Democrats who have ever run for president of the United States that said that unions are good, they should be organized, they should have more members, they should have paycheck deduction, they should have recognition by card check. The only ones that have ever run for president on the Democratic ticket that were not afraid to say the word union and that union is good. That's what this is all about, sisters and brothers. Unions are good, and they're for us. What about this guy? What about this guy, John Kerry? George Bush, health care. 44 million Americans without health care. 3.5 million more under his watch. 66 million Americans inadequate or no health care at all. He says he's for everybody to have health care. In Iraq. Yeah, everybody in Iraq have health care. That's nice. And maybe that's a good thing. But I say, Mr. Bush, before you give universal health care in Iraq, before you take care of their crumbling infrastructure in Iraq, Mr. Bush, you take care of the people at home. You take care of America, Mr. Bush. America, Mr. Bush. In the debate last night, they talked about prescription drugs. They talked about the reimportation of drugs from Canada. And 4 years ago, Bush said that's a good thing. Yes. And if he goes back, it'll be four more. But they've stopped it, the reimportation of drugs. I'll give you one for example. In Michigan, they import trash from Canada. But they can't import drugs. 3 weeks ago, custom agents, to the tune of 50, stopped a truck. You know, they're usually out there looking for marijuana or cocaine or something like that. They stopped that truck. They stopped the truck not for marijuana and cocaine, because it was filled with prescription drugs for seniors. And they confiscated them. He's not for it. He's not for it. John Kerry will be president for only a short time. We will have the reimportation of drugs from Canada. Seniors will get them. You'll get them. They will be less expensive than what you pay now. That's what he stands for. Who is this guy? Who is this guy? See, I even brought it with me. Drugs seized by customs. I keep these little things. Sisters and brothers, the economy. Why, they were cheering when that report came out yesterday. But everybody said, all the economists said, that it's slowing down. It didn't show any real movement. 17,000 industrial jobs were lost in that report. Outsourcing is all over the place. You know that. You know what happened to the machinists in this state? Without sourcing? Give me an amen on that, sister. Amen. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. Yeah, you know what it's like. Outsourcing. John Kerry's opposed to it. He said it. He's opposed to outsourcing. George Bush has given tax credits to companies to outsource in America. He believes in that. He believes in that. You know why? He doesn't know you. He doesn't know you. Kerry knows you. Kerry knows your goals, your aims, objectives, and we never let him forget. But Bush, he don't know you. You're never around him. I mean, I've told you maybe this before. I can't even get in the White House. Not even on a tour in the White House. Right? Greg knows that. Right? John Sweeney, right after he was elected, called Bush after he was coronated by Florida, by the Supreme Court. And he said, Mr. President, now that you are the president. I would never say that. But he did. He said, it's one country. We'd like to help. 14 million Americans are in American labor. And Mr. Bush said, John, I appreciate this call. Thank you. Let me get back to you. Well, it's been a long time. It's been a long time. Right after 9-11, 9-12, after those tragedies in Pennsylvania, people died. Union members in the plane, pilots, flight attendants, American Airlines. At the Pentagon, union members from AFGE died. You know the story of the towers? Almost 3,000 died. We lost people in the towers, AFSCME. Hotel and restaurant workers lost people. The firefighters lost people. The laborers, the operating engineers lost people. He doesn't know these people. Sisters and brothers, every time in America, whether it's World War II or Korea, whether it's Vietnam or the first Gulf War, or this one. Every time there's an earthquake or catastrophe, Mount Helena, stay easy there. Stay easy. Anytime there's any kind of tragic, catastrophic event in this country or war, it's not people he knows it goes. It's the sons and daughters, the fathers and mothers of working families who have carried this flag in every war in America. Every war in America, your brothers, your sisters, they don't know them, but they're the ones that carry the fight day in and day out. The first ones there and the last ones to leave. It's working families that have built the country. It's working families that fight for the country. Thank you. Bush, Cheney, they don't know you. Not at all. He wants to do Kerry, health care and the economy. Says he has a way to create millions of jobs in 5 years. Millions of jobs in 5 years. And Bush says, well, how do you pay for that? How do you pay for that? Kerry says, well, Bush says first, he's going to raise taxes. He's going to raise taxes. He's going to raise taxes. Did you watch that debate last night? You know what you had to notice whenever, the first debate was really out of sight. I mean, George Bush said it's hard work. It's hard work. I mean, you know, I'm in my office every day making phone calls. I talk to Vladimir. He said it again last night. He just talked to Tony Blair yesterday. Oh, yeah. Right. I mean, so George Bush says, how are you going to pay for that? John Kerry says, what I'm going to do is take the tax cut that went into effect for everybody making over $200,000 a year. Anybody here? Anybody here? $200,000 a year is going to take that back, but give you a tax cut. Give you a tax cut. Bush wants to give 1% of the people tax cut after tax cut after tax cut. That's what he stands for, sisters and brothers. But that's how John Kerry's going to pay for the jobs. He's going to take companies that now are headquartered in Bermuda. Bermuda, Toys R Us, Pitney Bowes, big ones. They're there because they don't pay a cent in taxes to the United States. No corporate tax at all. They have a mailbox. A mailbox. We went down and looked at it. A mailbox in Bermuda. Yeah, no taxes at all. I don't know whether you saw a report released the other day. General Electric just got $8 billion back in taxes. $8 billion. Big Blue, Citibank. Money back in taxes. Taxes. 55% of the largest corporations in America don't pay a dime. You got to pay yours. But they don't pay a dime in taxes. Kerry's got a program. Got a program for the needs of America. Is he perfect? No. Will he do everything? No. But your public workers, your middle-income people, and I say to you, if there is a member of a working family that votes for George Bush, they ought to have their head examined. They ought to have their head examined. They ought to have their head examined. And Iraq, you know the story in Iraq. You know, at the Republican National Convention, they mentioned John Kerry's name 40 times. Never mentioned once Osama bin Laden. Never once. I remember in those early days, George Bush would say, he can run, but he can't hide. Well, he's hiding. Hiding and hiding. We went into Iraq instead of going into Afghanistan and clean up the job, get Osama bin Laden and the seat of terrorism and rub it out. Rub it out for not only us, but for the world. He went to the wrong place. He went to the wrong place. He went to the wrong place, and now over 1,000 of the best of our country are gone. Thousands wounded. You go to Walter Reed, you go to Bethesda. They're in there. Matter of fact, it's packed. No hands or no legs, no arms. What kind of a life? What kind of a life forward do they have? Because he put them in harm's way. For whatever reason, we still don't understand. Deception, the cornerstone of the Bush administration. And then after Kerry seemed to get some traction on that, they came out with these swift boat ads. Did John Kerry really win those three Purple Hearts? Did he deserve the Bronze Star, the Silver Star? Every naval record says, yes, he did. Everybody in those boats says, yes, he did. But those ads say, no, no. There's a real question on that, a real question. Now, they say those kinds of things because they don't want you to think or talk or look at their record. George Bush, Texas Air National Guard. The Speaker of the House of Representatives in those days, Democrat, Got a call from Bush friend. Can you help George Sr.'s son? He did. That speaker, he's ashamed that he did. He jumped him over about 300 to 400 people on a list to put him in the National Guard. And let me tell you, I was there then. I lived in those days. Some of you did, too. I mean, everybody knows the National Guard today is different from the National Guard then. The National Guard today now goes to Iraq. They now go to war. People that are 45, 48, and 50, they go to war. You know, in World War II, they stopped the draft at 39. But they're sending National Guard now to Iraq. People that are almost ready to retire from their jobs. But in those days, everybody knew, you don't want to go to Vietnam, you either go to Canada or the National Guard. Either one of the two. Either one of the two. So he jumped Bush over 300 to 400 people, put him in the Air National Guard. Really, don't kid anybody, so he didn't have to go to Vietnam, sisters and brothers. And then he left Texas and he went to Alabama. But nobody saw him there. Nobody saw him there. There were only 20 people that were pilots and not one of them saw him. The only record they have of him is getting a tooth filled in Alabama. Healthcare. He was AWOL in Alabama. He must have been out looking for the Viet Cong in Alabama. Sisters and brothers. That's George Bush. Cheney, he didn't want to go either. Five deferments. Five. On Meet the Press in 1982, they said, why didn't you go to Vietnam? He said, I have better things to do. Well, I thought he was a patriot. He's in favor of the Patriot Act. I thought he was a patriot, really. And then one that you don't hear much of is Ashcroft, super patriot. That belongs to him, that flag. John Ashcroft. He got a deferment so he wouldn't have to go to Vietnam teaching school in St. Louis. Now, teaching is a good profession, but not to duck Vietnam. That's John Ashcroft, the super patriot. Does John know that that flag is not his? That flag belongs to you. That flag belongs to America. And in November, we're going to take it back. I remember that Republican National Convention at Zell Miller. Do you remember him? Talking about John Kerry's record, not fit to lead the nation. Bush has said it a lot out in the stump in debates because they won't know what to do, how to stop terror. Did anybody ever think to ask the question, when 9/11 happened, whose watch was it? Huh? Whose watch was it? George Bush was sitting in a classroom in Florida. It wasn't Clinton's watch. It wasn't Gore's watch. It wasn't Kerry's watch. They hit us at the towers in Somerset, Pennsylvania, and the Pentagon on George Bush's watch. Not anybody else's. Not anybody else's. Nobody brings that up. They're afraid. They're afraid John Ashcroft will arrest them. Arrest him. Zell Miller said everything he could about Kerry, and he said, if you think this old Marine is going to stand by and see John Kerry become the president, you have another thought coming. Well, the Marines are a wonderful service. A wonderful service. I was in the Army, but Marines are a wonderful service. So we went to the website, Zell Miller. Right? We found out that he was in the Marines, yeah. He joined, he went to Paris Island, then he went to the Great Lakes, And he went to the Great Lakes. And then he went to the Great Lakes. Then he went back to Paris Island and he got out. He never fired a bullet in combat. Never led a force. And maybe it wouldn't be so bad. But the way he described himself and Kerry to America, you would have thought that he was with Teddy Roosevelt going up San Juan Hill. And he was in the Great Lakes. So I think Kerry's fit. I think Edwards is fit to run this country, to bring the economy back, to bring health care back, sisters and brothers. I believe all of that. I believe all of that. So as I said, just about 70% of our members believe it too. They're for Kerry. But I'll tell you where we're hurting. We're hurting in union households. Ever since the Republican National Convention, we lost about 14, 15 points in union households. Many of them women, afraid, terror, scared. And so they just dropped down. You know the whole picture. Iraq, Afghanistan. I mean, they had the elections yesterday, and everybody's now running around saying it's fraud. People who are on the ballot. I don't know whether it was or not. But you know the whole picture. You know health care. You know education. You know that your kids probably can't even afford to go to a state university these days. Leave no child behind in education. They never put the money in. Shorted them millions and millions and millions of dollars. You know the whole picture. So you have to, I think, leave here and not just go back to the workplace. Not just go back to the bowling alleys and talk to people. Back to the churches or wherever to talk to people. But you got to go home. You got to go home and talk to people. The people who live in your home might be a son or a daughter. Might be a wife or a husband. You got to talk to them. About what this, and you've heard it so many times, the most important election in our lifetime. Now, I believe that. I believe that. Reagan was bad, but not as bad as Bush. His father wasn't good, but not as bad as his son. This is about our country, our rights as Americans, sisters and brothers. That's what it's about. We want our kids in North Korea in a year or in Iran. I remember Bush always saying, we're not the police force of the world. And now he's chief of police. Now he's the chief of police. So you got to go home and talk to the other members of your family. If we can do that, if you will do that, we can win. We got to communicate. You got cell phones. I didn't hear any go off, but I know you have them. I know you have them. You got some extra minutes on those cell phones, too, the way they work these deals now. We're going to ask you, I think, right? We're going to ask you to make some calls. We got sheets of people that you can call, don't we, Greg? I'm glad. Last state I was in, they forgot the sheets. But we have them. Right. So we're going to ask you to make these calls while you're here, doing this all over the country. We've already made, out of AFSCME phone banks alone, 2 million calls. Out of AFSCME phone banks alone. 2 million. 2 million. Don't call AFSCME headquarters in Washington. Nobody's home. They're all out. They're all out in the field. Might be in Maine, they might be in New Hampshire, they might be in Wisconsin, Iowa, here, Minnesota, whatever. They're all out. For the first time, the entire labor movement's in solidarity. That's how bad he is. They're in solidarity, whether it's Teamsters or machinists. building trades or metal trades, public workers, AFSCME, SEIU, all together in solidarity to win this election. I've never seen it before in my lifetime. Probably the day after we won't be in solidarity, but until then, and that day we are. So if you go home and talk to the household, talk to the people you represent on the job sites, oh, we can win this. We can win this. The day after the first debate, I talked to John Kerry. He did well in that one. That's when Bush was in pain. I don't know whether he watched him closely last night, but he wasn't making those faces, but his eyes kept blinking like that, blinking. It's like a deer in the headlights. He's blinking like that. I mean, I don't think a guy that blinks that much should be the president. I really don't. But sisters and brothers, you got to be able to take this message back and do it. You got to be able to do that, or it's going to be four more years. You hear it all the time, four more years of George Bush. We can't make it. We went through those 4 years, sisters and brothers. Now, if you do it here, and he's in decent shape here, but as I said, if he doesn't win here, he's not going to Washington, Kerry. So you got to do your job. Do your job. Do it more than ever before, your job. If you do it, sisters and brothers, think of this. If you do it in November and then in January, if you do it and do it right, and we do it across the country, Nancy Pelosi will be the first woman speaker of the House of Representatives. First woman speaker ever, ever. Daschle will win in South Dakota, be the head of the Senate. We'll send George Bush back to Crawford, Texas. He likes it so much. We'll take Dick Cheney, find that undisclosed location, put him in, lock it, and never see him again. Never see him again. You can do it. You can do it. And John Kerry, John Edwards can walk in that White House and make it the people's house again, the way it was under Clinton and Gore. And then we'll be able to say once again, this land is our land. Thank you, sisters and brothers. Thank you.